Blog Talk Radio.
Doing the Bankhead Bounce, that is my theme song, not yours. It's that time again. This is the hottest show on Blog Talk Radio. We are doing a nostalgia show today. This is the No Romance Without Finance show. I'm your host. My name is Vernon Muhammad. Peace and blessings to you all. Assalamu alaikum. Good evening. Glad to have you with us. And sounds like Sister Gidget is on the line. Sister Gidget, assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam, sir. How are you?
I'm feeling fine. How are you today?
I am blessed by Allah's magnificent saving grace.
As they say, God is good all the time, and all the time God is good. So you better know that if you know nothing
Amen.
Else. I'm glad that you can be on with us. We had an epiphany a couple of weeks ago. I said, I'm doing a No Romance Without Finance show. This is awesome. This is great. People are getting introduced to some wonderful information. But I had to go back to where it all started because something just didn't feel right. You know, I'm doing No Romance Without Finance show. And this is not the first show with this title that I've done before. Several years ago, I did a show, and I had a wonderful partner on with me for that particular show, that series of episodes. I think we did two or three. And it was called No Romance Without Finance show, and I had the guest for today on with me then. Her name is Dr. Taffy Wagner, and she's on the line right now. Say hello and what's up, Dr. Taffy?
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Feeling good.
Great.
Good to have you back on. I was just lately, I've been reminiscing a lot about you, me, and Mary from the Bride Shop, and just realizing how much we've gone through and how much has changed over the past couple of years.
Yes, and it's gone by really fast, right?
It really has. Time has flown. But I tell you, some people don't let moss grow under their feet, and you are definitely one of those people. You got a lot going on. Let me tell the people about you a little bit. Dr. Taffy Wagner is out of Denver, Colorado. She is a certified educator in personal finances and a certified credit report reviewer. Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
And I'm an author and a homeschool mom. I love homeschooling because, you know, our kids today really need a lot of attention, but they need to be educated on how to be, you know, problem-solving kids. They need to be very secure in who they are. And so I really believe in pouring a lot into the children, and I believe in teaching people a lot about money management so that they can actually have their money working for them versus them working so hard for the money.
That is right on point with what we have going on today and what the theme of this show is in general. People spend too much time and too much energy chasing after the dollar, and most of the time when you're in that kind of dynamic or that kind of orientation, you're not right. All you can really do is spend too much time, spend too much energy to get what it is you need. So if we put things in proper perspective, put things in order before we dig a hole too deep for ourselves, or even if we find ourselves in a hole, the first priority should and could be straightening our affairs out, getting our financial houses in order. So would that be in line with what you're about and what you do?
Oh, absolutely. Because one of the things that people have to realize, too, is, you know, when it comes to the finances and the finances being out of order, that actually starts on the inside because people don't think that they're worthy of wealth or they're worthy of not living in lack, that type of stuff. But that's on the inside, and you got to clean up yourself on the inside in order to get that outside right.
That's a deep statement you say right there. People think they're worthy of wealth, not of wealth. That seems so strange. You need something. You know you need it. You know you're going to do whatever you have to do to get it, but you feel that you're not worthy of it. That's only holding yourself back from it.
But you know what? That happens every day because there are, you know, they beat themselves up in their mind because they might want to be wealthy. However, they have self-sabotaging habits that keep them from being wealthy. As far as, you know, they might be lending money to somebody. If somebody comes to them and say, I need to borrow such and such, they don't have a criteria of, okay, this is what's going to go on in order for you to borrow, in order for me to lend to you. But they just think that they are the ones that they should be giving all their money away. Well, people give away so much that they actually create debt for themselves and they're not able to pay their own bills. That happens every day. And so those people, because they're givers, and I understand being a giver, but every time that you give, you're not instructed to give by God to that person that might need that help. And so you open up that ugly door.
Wow. That's something to think about. Yeah, you know, that's right. Some people guilt themselves into how they handle money, whether they give it all away, give too much of it away, or whether they guilt themselves away from it. You know, some people say they misquote that famous saying that money is the root of all evil.
That's right.
Now, you and I know it doesn't say that. If you're going to quote it right, the book says the love of money is the root of all evil. You don't necessarily have to love money to get it and to do what you have to do with it. And we all know that the rent's got to be paid, the lights got to stay on, you got to get food in the cabinet, and without money, that's going to be hard to do. You can't afford to cut yourself off from it.
Exactly. And another part of it, too, Brother Vernon, is this. We know that, you know, unfortunately, families passed on generations of debt instead of wealth. And so when they're passing on, not finding out about money and having those wrong thoughts, then that pattern continues to repeat where, you know, their children grow up and they have debt. And then they have babies and this kind of stuff, and the same pattern keeps on continuing until somebody gets sick and tired enough to say, I'm not going to go down that same road. I have to do something different. I have to talk to somebody so that I don't repeat that pattern because I don't want to carry that on with my children.
Well, that brings to mind that saying, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again.
Yes.
At a certain point, somebody, you know, at a certain point, either you, if you're engaged in that, or somebody in that line has to get it and realize that something's got to change. Somebody's got to do something different. I saw that, you know, as a pattern in my own family. You know, people, particularly the men in the family, end up getting high blood pressure and getting overweight and whatever else comes along with that by the time they hit the mid-40s. And, you know, I had to determine early on, I'm not going to go out like that. You know, I had to do some things different. So I might be the one they make fun of when we go to the family reunions because I don't eat meat. But I tell you what, you know, I don't look like look like my older brothers and my dad did when they were my age.
So
you got to do something. Put something in the mix. Do something for yourself so that you can change the circumstances and the reality that you are surely headed toward if you know you don't have your stuff right.
Absolutely. Because, you know, like even within my own family, my mother had a big family, but I can remember some of her sisters, you know, they wasn't working and they were on welfare. And then when they had kids, all the girls ended up on welfare. And when I was growing up, I was like, you know what? I don't care what I have to do to get out of Louisiana so that I don't end up this way.
Mm-hmm.
I have to leave because it seemed like it was accepted that that was the road that everybody took.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's not acceptable for me. That's just not going to be acceptable for me. And so I left. And, you know, I'm the only one that left. And finally some of those girls, but after they got older, they got off of welfare and they got jobs, but they didn't start out that way. They repeated the patterns that the parents did.
Because
it just seemed like it was the only option. And I was like, are people really paying attention? And you know how we have those family secrets. You know, you don't say nothing. You see that stuff going on, but they don't say nothing.
Right.
Money is a big one that they will not talk about because the parents didn't know. And I understand they did the best that they could with the knowledge that they had.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much information out there now for us.
Mm.
We're going to get into that.
We're going to get into that a little while. Normally when I start the show, I try to keep it light for a little while, but you just hit the ground running. That's what I like about you, though. That's what I like about you. You're strictly business. You like to take care of business, and you know that you have something of value and that can be useful for people. And that's what I know you for sharing. It's been almost like constant barrage. If we were in the ring, I would feel like I was getting hit with a flurry of lefts and rights from Muhammad Ali. You just have so much good information that comes, and I hope that the listeners and the people who will tune in to this on the archives will pay close attention because we're going to have loads of good, useful information and resources for you. But before we get into the heart of the matter, what the show is really about, I want to highlight something that yesterday, as a matter of fact, I got a chance to drive up to Philadelphia and be with a good friend of mine, Norm Bond. We were with the National Association of Marketing Directors. They put on an event, Buy Black Festival. You know, we're in the holiday season and everybody feels like they just have to go out and spend their money. So Norm is promoting the idea that, hey, you know, at least in Philadelphia, he's actually doing it nationwide, but the event that we went to yesterday was in Philadelphia, promoting the idea that if we want to go out and, you know, lay these dollars out for all these different things, let's feel a sense of duty and obligation to spend it with people who look like us and who are affected by our community and who can have an effect and impact for the better in our community. So it was a wonderful event yesterday in Philadelphia at the, I think it's called the One District Plaza or City District Plaza or something like that. And just an awesome, awesome event. We had the head of the Black Chamber of Commerce there and WURD owners, the radio station that's there. I think he's like the Kathy Hughes of Philadelphia, Mr. Lomax, and a bunch of other heavy hitters in our community. Sometimes we don't realize wealth of resources that exist right in our own community. So this was a great event. And I picked up the Philadelphia Tribune, which I didn't know is the oldest black-owned and operated newspaper in America, the Philadelphia Tribune. And they have an article in there which kind of is in line with the theme of this show, No Romance Without Finance. I'm always trying to highlight something that we should be aware of, whether it's on the local scene, national or international scene. But this states, there's a study, black-owned firms are key to cutting black unemployment. Black-owned firms are key to cutting black unemployment. Now, that's not rocket science, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that's something that we can, you know, ingrain deeper into our psyche, looking at spending money with black-owned businesses and black-owned businesses being more responsible to our communities. That's something I would love to see within my lifetime take place, because without the business community, without an effectively organized business community and mindset of entrepreneurs who not only effectively do what they do so that they can make money, but they are adding value and benefit to black people, that's what's going to help all of us get ahead and go as far as we can. Read a little bit from the article. So there's a growing buzz throughout the country that one of the most effective strategies for reducing the unemployment rate among blacks is for African-American firms to support and hire more blacks. Like I said, it's not rocket science. Currently, Congress is assisting small businesses as an employment priority. And there are those who feel that if the government targeted more aid to black-owned businesses, those firms would be able to reduce black unemployment in a way that growth policy cannot. I thought that was interesting, number one, because it's a conversation that a lot of people that I interact with just aren't engaging in. So anytime I get the chance, I'm trying to put it out there and make it the point of conversation. Mm-hmm. But if we start looking at the resources that we have in our own community and amongst ourselves, we can actually turn our situation around overnight. We know that currently the unemployment rate is 8.2%, but the rate for African Americans is 14%. That's at least what's on the books. You know, it might be higher in reality. It says while among whites it's 7.3%, and it also says an astounding 40.5% of black teenagers are unemployed. Even if the economy were to grow rapidly, black unemployment would still lag behind. So, you know, I'd read that and highlight that just to put the emphasis on personal responsibility. You know, you mentioned the thing that people aren't talking about, the big white elephant in the room. We can't continue to go on like that. You know, we have to start focusing on doing what's necessary to turn our own situation around.
Absolutely.
Without that, without putting that focus and actually taking the steps in the right direction, you can almost look down the line 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, if you make it that far, and see, almost pinpoint exactly what the problems will be and where they'll come up. And that kind of brings us to what we're actually here for today, because the topic that we're discussing is financial planning for newlyweds and people who are getting ready to get married and couples in general, but specifically, you know, family planning for marriage.
Yes.
So, and now, that's an area of specialty for you, right?
It is. Now, I want to comment, though, on what you're saying about, you know, the black unemployment rate and, you know, that we need to look within our own community. Now, I thoroughly agree with that on looking within our own community, because I had this discussion with a friend of mine just a couple of days ago, because, you know, we get invited to attend a lot of these functions, but we as experts, they're not asking us within our own community, and we can't figure out why that is. And we've been around for so long, and so it's almost like looking over the person who has the most experience for whoever is the hot ticket item right now.
Right, right.
You know, and that's where I think we miss out on the people who have the foundation that can really affect change within our community, because we're not going to the ones who are the seasoned, you know the information.
That really are already right there at our fingertips.
That's right. That's right. And so I do believe, you know, I agree just like you. It would totally change overnight. If we started really relying on each other and, you know, like let's say, for example, we know that, you know, Sister Mary is the owner of blackbride.com. If we all just put out her information one time, her bridal shows would be full. You know, all kinds of stuff would change for her business. You know, it's those kinds of things, because we all have our own audience. It's not a competition thing. We can all support each other, and we'd be fine.
Right, right.
But it's that kind of stuff. Yeah. So
you're
I'm glad you brought that out.
No doubt, no doubt. You know, I was talking about looking ahead and being able to see where the problems are going to come in. If those of you who are listening out there, if you're thinking about marriage, if you're not on the in the running just yet, but you know you need to get prepared, if you already are married and you want to get your financial ship in a little better shape than it is, this is going to be the show for you. So listen closely and take notes because, like I said, I'm looking for a lot of good information to be shared. Sister Gidja, you got your pen and pad?
Absolutely, sir.
All right. Everybody's paying attention. So, Dr. Taffy.
Okay.
Tell me, you've been doing some work over the last year or two that focuses specifically on couples, on newlyweds. What is one of the first things that you tell people or advise people, steer people towards when it comes time to have that conversation about finances and economics and their relationship?
The first thing is to even have the conversation. Don't be afraid to have the conversation because they're so apprehensive about their financial behavior and their background that they are just afraid that if they release that information, that person on the other side of that table is going to leave them. And what I always tell them is if that person is going to leave you based on the information that you share, you were not supposed to be together in the first place because the things that you were going to share with them, they were not there when you made the decisions you made that caused whatever the financial situation is. And so they can't hold it against you. Now, they may have to deal with some consequences based on those decisions. However, they can't hold it against you because they were not there. Everybody continues to grow no matter what happens in life. We all grow. We get better. We learn. We get better information. So, but you need to at least share what the financial status is, that you, whatever the baggage is that you're bringing into the marriage, whatever, you know, however you believe in spending money or saving money, you need to share what you believe about money before you get married so that nobody gets their feelings hurt or no one feels that they were deceived after you come back from the honeymoon. You come back and you get all this mail and you're like, wait a minute, what's with all these bills? You didn't tell me. So now they feel like they were lied to. You don't start out a marriage having trust being broken. You don't have somebody think that they can't be secure in their marriage because you're going to be sneaky about doing certain things. You need to value your relationship enough to be very honest and put the cards on the table in the beginning. Now, you don't put everything out there all on one day because you will overwhelm them, but you take time to start communicating, saying, what do you feel about this? Because there are certain times when you're out with that one you love before you get married and even during the marriage where they might have had a bad day or they got an unexpected bill. Well, that's the opportunity for you to step right in and say, okay, so you've had a situation to occur where a bill came in and you didn't expect it. So how would you handle that? And that starts the conversation.
Mm.
Look for those opportune moments that come up where they're already talking about their finances because they're venting to you. You're somebody that they like, they trust, they love, they know they're going to marry. So they're venting to you. So take the opportunity to piggyback off the question and say, okay, maybe I have a hypothetical situation. What would you do if I said my mother wanted to borrow X amount of dollars? What would you think about that?
That's a good way to open up the discussion, huh?
Yes, it is, because they're already talking about it. So you're not pouncing on them saying, oh, well, I noticed you haven't paid this and you haven't paid that. Because sometimes in the relationships when they're dating, one person may already be managing the money for both. And they have a lot of bills and, you know, certain things start to come out. And the other person's like, wait, you know what? It's not the way you said it was. I don't like the way this picture's looking. But at least start the conversation and then pay attention to what they're saying about finances. For example, another one is I had one young lady said, you know, I know my fiancé had gotten a raise. But he got the raise, but he wasn't paying off any debt. And he made more money than her. And I said, well, what's wrong with that picture? If he's not taking care of his finances before he marries you and he got extra money, what's going to happen once you're married? I believe in looking at the big picture. You have to come to the table with a plan already to clean up your financial situation, regardless if you get married or not. You can't expect it to be that other person's responsibility because it's not their responsibility. Yes, the two of you become one, but it's when you come into the marriage, you have your own credit report. You have your own credit rating. That stays that way. You're going to still have your own credit report and your own rating. There's no such thing as a joint credit report. No such thing. Need to put that out there first and foremost. Everybody still has their own individual credit. Now, you may co-sign on an application for something, and it shows up on your credit report that you co-signed for something, but you still have your own individual credit report. And in that, for that very reason, even in marriage, each person needs to maintain some good credit, a good credit report, period, because it will affect the other one if you decide to do something and then you need a co-signer, per se, or you do a joint application for a house or a car. They will pull everybody's credit.
Mm. And you don't want to have one person holding up the show or weighing everybody else down.
Well, and you also want to make sure that you have already told that person what's on your credit report. You do not want to get to the table. Let's say you're getting ready to close on a house, and they pull a credit report, and they're like, oh, no, you can't even get the house because this person's credit is awful. Okay? And then you'd be looking there going, wait a minute, how come I didn't know? And you've been married maybe 6 months or a year.
Yeah.
That stuff does happen, though. So you need to be going in saying, honey, I want to show you my credit report. Here's my plan, you know, for what I'm going to do to clean it up. And if your credit report is fine, because I've had couples where they didn't even have any credit, and they're saying, okay, Dr. Chaffee, how do we even establish credit to start off? And that's a good thing, because you can start off building it right versus the other side, the flip side of it, where you've gotten too many credit cards and you ain't been paying.
Mm.
And you can still clean that up, but that takes a minute. But you can still do that too. So I'm always going to advocate, whichever way it goes, you can always clean up anything, but you have to be willing to do it.
And the key is being open and honest and upfront about it.
That's right. And accepting responsibility for the choices you made that caused the situation to occur. Because I've had some couples where it was a medical situation, and now they have medical bills that are unbelievable, and they bring them to the marriage. Well, you know, you can't always be prepared for medical situations. You just can't.
Right.
And we all know that it costs a fortune. When you don't have insurance, it costs a lot. Even when you have insurance, sometimes it still costs a lot. So you need to be able to, you know, say to that loved one, here's the things that I'm dealing with. This is what I think about money. This is what my background is. Because sometimes it needs to be changed because our thoughts have been corrupted based on our upbringing and what we saw.
You're absolutely right. You know, and again, with that barrage of left and right, I wanted to ask a question a couple of minutes ago, something that you said, but we kind of covered it. I was going to say, well, who should take responsibility? Let's say nobody, you know, neither party on either side of the table is forthcoming. You know, nobody's starting a conversation that they can segue into.
Okay.
You know, who should take responsibility? Who should lead the charge when it comes to getting the finances in order? How should, you know, a couple approach that?
Well, what I like to tell them is look at what they, in order to decide how to handle that, who should start the conversation, each person should look at their own individual background as far as how did they handle the money on their own. Were they good at paying bills on time, or did they have to be reminded because they got the slip in the mail? What did they do the first time they had a financial emergency to occur? Did they run to mom or dad, or were they able to solve it? So look at themselves individually and how they handled, and then come to the table and say, you know what, I want to tell you about some situations that occurred with me. And then the other person will say, oh, wow, they're really trusting me in order to reveal this information. So then it'll put them at ease, and then they can come to the table and say, well, let me tell you about myself. Because there might not be a chance to segue. There might not be anything to segue, but one person should really value that relationship enough, and there will be one person that will value it enough to say, I want to make sure we go into it right, and it won't necessarily be the husband. It might not necessarily be the wife, but it will be one of them that will say. Now, personally, for the women that are listening, it needs to be you, okay? It needs to be you because society has put so much on the man in the first place. He needs to be the breadwinner, and he needs to do this, and he needs to do that. Okay, it's 2012 going into 2013. We know it's a different day. It really is. But, however, most women still end up making most of the financial decisions within the marriage. It's usually them. Men don't want to be bothered with, you know, writing out the check or taking care. No, my own husband, he's like, you know what, I'm not good at that. That's administrative. He's never good at that, and I know that, so I handle that. But I still include him in here's how the bills are paid. Here's when they are paid. This is when the money goes out. That way he knows in case he needed to step in. So there's no secrets about how the money is being handled. But in the very beginning, you just need to start to have that conversation and really put it on the table. Don't let a lot of outside people say, no, girl, don't worry about it. Y'all in love. Y'all don't have to discuss it. And even for the man, you know, he go to work and his coworkers are saying, man, just, you know, the wedding's her thing. No, no, no. No, because when you're planning the wedding, it's during that time. Because let's look at it like this. The wedding planning is a test trial for what the marriage is going to look like. Why do I say that? Because guess what? You're spending money. It doesn't matter where this it doesn't matter whose money it is. You're still spending money, whether it's the parents or the bride and groom themselves. And you have to talk about how much you're going to spend for the caterer, the dress, the reception, the venue, all those different things. And you have to learn how to negotiate. You have to learn how to compromise. That gives you a prime example right there what's going to occur in the marriage.
Okay.
Okay.
Recognize the signs. Be on the lookout.
Look at the signs. Look at the signs. Can you discuss the stuff even during the wedding planning? Or does somebody have to have their own way? Because I tell you what, I've watched enough say yes to the dress to where some of these people would not be getting married. Because the bride is there and she's all excited and she got her mom and dad and her bridesmaids. And the dress is like $2,000 and $3,000 more than they budgeted for.
Wow.
She don't even call the groom. But she says, you know, the family's saying, oh, honey, well, we'll get the money from somewhere. And you just go ahead and get the one you want. And I'm like, whoa. So in your marriage, if you can't get it with your husband, or you mean to tell me you're going to go to your parents?
Wow, as a consistent fallback.
Come on.
Line, right?
And then alienate him, make him feel like he can't handle, you know. I was like, whoa. But I do, and that's what I look at when I watch those shows. That's the stuff that I see.
Wow, and that's, you know, they call it reality TV for a reason. I bet you those type of things go on a whole lot more than just on that show.
It does, it does. And those are some, you can almost pick them off and say, you know what, it's not going to last because she's selfish, or it's not going to last because he's this way. You can really see it, because that is really the trial run during the wedding planning. It is.
Wow. Now, what are some of those red flags that you see when you're, you know, courting someone, when you're engaged to someone, or when you're just in the boyfriend and girlfriend stage? But for the people that you get an opportunity to talk to, what are some of the qualities that you see that, you know, should really be a cause for concern?
Okay, one of the biggest ones is if he's always trying to buy you things. Now, I'm not saying he shouldn't pamper you a little bit. Don't get me wrong. But if he's always trying to buy, spend money versus having discussions, that means there's a cover-up. That also means that he's probably not paying his bills, because eventually he'll get to the point where he starts fussing about not having enough money.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
So one is trying to buy everything. Then the flip side of that is not discussing nothing. Don't ever want to talk about money. I don't care what it is. We're not going to have that discussion. I've had brides come to me and say that a lot. And they're scared because they're like, well, how come I can't get him to discuss? Now, part of the problem there, though, is how she's presenting it. Because with money, it's all about presentation. It's how you present that topic that will either warm somebody up to want to discuss it, or it's going to make them go exactly the opposite. And they're like, I don't want to discuss nothing with you. Because you may remind them of a previous relationship. You may remind them of a parent that scolded them. All those factors come into play. And so, but if he is so hard-pressed that he don't want to discuss it at all, that's a big red flag, and you might want to just step back from that thing and delay that wedding planning a little bit and find out why he doesn't want to discuss it. And you may very well find out it has nothing to do with you, but he's taking it out on you.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, same thing. If you've got a bride who you've expressed to her that You don't want to spend ever X amount of dollars for the wedding, and she tends to just blow you off, and she's spending, then you may want to step back, because she's creating debt and putting you in an uncomfortable situation. And I've had grooms that have called off the wedding because brides wouldn't listen to them. See, with men, they're going to tell you exactly what they want, and they'll tell you exactly what they think. It is the woman's responsibility, though, not to hear what she wants to hear and overlook what they are saying. Okay, because men are—they're not even pretending with you. They're just gonna tell you straight out what it is. If they're saying, "I don't want to create debt, I don't want to go into this," da, 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 that's what they mean. But women, you know, because we're emotional, we want to be in love, we want to do this, we want to do that. We tend to overlook. Oh, I can change him once we say yes. No, you cannot. Okay, you cannot change him. He's comfortable with who he is. he means that. And so you really have to listen to what each other are saying and watch those flags. Because the flags are there to say, hey, don't rush into it. Let's address it. Because if you can handle it during the engagement, then you'll be fine in the marriage. But if you can't handle it in the engagement, you're not going to be able to handle it in the marriage. They're still the same person. They didn't change.
Hmm.
They're showing you who they are.
And if you ignore the signs, it's your fault.
It is your fault. And you, and then, because, you know, I always get this, too. Later on down the road when they're getting ready to get divorced, you always hear, you know what? He was saying this to me or he was showing me this, but I chose not to listen to him. I chose to just let it go on by. And let me tell you, one of the things, too, this is another big one, okay? If you have a spouse, and it could be either way, that says they want everything in their name by themselves, including whatever you make, and the other person has nothing in their name, you need to run. Okay? Because what happens in that thing is the person loses their identity. They lose their identity within the marriage. And if the marriage don't work, then that person has to start over from square one. They have no credit. They don't know how to pay bills. They can't go out and buy a house. They can't go out and get an apartment. And sometimes, and it's usually the woman, unfortunately, but sometimes she hasn't even been working. So she has no work history. She is really starting from scratch.
Wow.
Okay, but it has happened to some men because I've spoken at some singles conferences, and the men are so terrified to even think about getting married because they've been burned so bad that they won't do it. So it does go both ways, but if somebody is telling you in the engagement, I want everything in my name and da-da-da-da, I'm going to take care of you, you got to hold on to some things for yourself. It ain't nothing against them, but you cannot do that. You just do not do that. It's not saying you're making a way out for escape. I'm not saying that. But every person needs to have an account of their own where there's some money in there where they can go pamper themselves or they can pamper the other person. But you never want to make a spouse feel as if you are giving them allowance. You don't treat them like a child.
Mm. Good information. Okay. Good information on the No Romance Without Finance show. We're going to take a real quick break and then come back, hear from our sponsor, and then get to some of the callers we have online. We have at least one caller who's got his hand raised. We've got a few other people listening in. And I don't have the, I'm not looking at the chat. Sister Gidget is looking at the chat. So let's take this break, and on the other side, we'll come on back and get deeper into this conversation. I want to get into some action plans and ask you how you solve some particular problems.
Okay.
All right. Back to the No Romance with Our Finance show. I'm your host, Vernon Muhammad, and I'm here with our wonderful guest, Dr. Taffy Wagner, who is helping us to understand financial planning for marriage. We got a couple of callers, and we have a conversation, an actual comment from the chat room. Sister Keisha from Atlanta, she kind of co-signed on your statement earlier. She said, yes, women marry men to change them typically, and men marry women typically thinking they will be the same. I think typically she's right.
Oh, yeah.
But, that comes into play an awful lot. And there's, you know, one of the things that I talk about frequently with my friends and people that I get to have conversations with is being authentic, being straight up right from the beginning can mitigate so many problems. But if you walk into a situation thinking that, later on I'll do this or I'll fix this or I'll get him to do this or, well, you know, she's going to be like this and that's just the way it's going to be, you leave so many windows cracked and doors open and you're just setting yourself up for problems later on down the line.
Absolutely.
So we got a caller who's been in queue for a while. This is a caller from the 303 area code. Please identify yourself. Your microphone is open.
No, that's Dr. Kathy's number.
Yeah, that's me.
918 has a call, Brother Vernon.
I hit the wrong button. Call from 918. Welcome to the No Romance Without Finance show.
Assalamualaikum.
Waalaikum salam. Who's
this?
This is Brother Ivan from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Ah, Brother Ivan. Oklahoma's in the house. How you feeling, brother?
Oh, man, I'm feeling wonderful, man. I see the subject is No Romance Without Finance, huh?
That's the name of the show, brother. the subject that we're actually dealing with today, though, is financial planning for marriage. See, I had to rope you in here. You thought we were going to talk about the ladies and whatnot, but no, sir, brother. We're talking about getting your paper straight. Getting the money right, getting the finances right so that we can get to the romance. I know you like romance, brother. I like romance, too. But let's get
well,
the finances straight.
Just think about something the minister said when we were at the retreat this year back in August, and the minister did a cameo appearance via Skype. And we were allowed to ask him questions, I think, for about an hour or so. And so that was one of the questions. So the minister said, the brother asked about, you know, finances, you know, before marriage, and he said that money should not be a prerequisite for a brother not to pursue a sister in courtship leading to marriage. He said, but he should be striving for his finances to be good enough to get off to a start. But it shouldn't be prerequisite for saying, I ain't hardly got no money, so I ain't going to pursue no sister. He said, no, sir. Absolutely not.
You never have enough money.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. He was saying that, yes, a brother should have himself together as best as possible, but he should not allow the fact his lack of funds should not be a reason why he shouldn't pursue courtship in marriage.
I said that's something to think about, because I think that I can probably identify quite a few men that I know who they're pausing just for that very reason. They want to be able to afford more, and they want to get their first house, or they want to do this or do that, or they want to get themselves out of debt. And all those are good things to try to do. But there's no guarantee that, you know, that's something that's going to be done at the end of this year. You know, there's no guarantee. So if you get into that line of thinking, you can go for years and years and years before you actually get that done.
Right. See, that's the thing.
He wants to go years and years and years like that.
He said the whole key is to have a plan. It's not about whether you got the money. Have a plan and sit down with the sister. He said, and be very honest with the sister. And if the sister takes her brother on where he's at, then she's not to try to live outside what he can afford if she decides to move forward with him. Yeah.
That's right. It's called living within your means.
Right.
It is.
I don't know no man that is right, man, that does not want to be able to provide his queen with whatever she wants. And you know what I'm saying? The reality of it is, it takes time to get like that, you know, unless you just, you know, it happens, or unless you're already rich or something like that. But, yeah, that's the thing, man. I agree with that, because I used to think, well, shoot, I ain't got a whole lot of money. I ain't gonna pursue no sister. Yes, sisters are concerned about being secure, but most of them are more concerned about, do you have a plan and a goal in place that I can help you with? That's what a lot of them are concerned with. Now, you do got some of the sisters, unfortunately, that look at it like, well, you know, he got to have this and that and the 401K and the stuff that is falling apart anyway. Some of them act like that. But for the most part, sisters want to get married and willing to work with a brother who has a goal in place that she can see what she can help him at.
And that is the truth. And the thing about it is, you have to have somebody that's going to be on the same page with you. But they also need to come to the table with a goal and a plan. You can't put it all off on him.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because I asked that question about 2 weeks ago. I said, what if your husband said in the beginning that, honey, I just want you to stay at home. I don't want you to have to work and this kind of stuff. But his finances were not covering all the household bills. What should she do? Should she go out and work and help him? What should she do? But some people were like, well, no, he said that, and he should know what to do in order to get it right. And I'm like, you going to let that man drown? You are not going to help him, and you don't have no kids at home? That's wrong.
Shame.
Come on. You need to be able to help that brother so that he don't sink, because as soon as he starts sinking and thinking that you're all about you, guess what? He will get up and get out.
And another thing, too, one of the things, you know, the minister said that, of course, you know, if we don't have to, we don't want our woman working on these white men's jobs. Now, watch this. One sister said, well, a lot of us are going to school and seeking our careers and getting degrees to go to work, which most of those careers you get, you go to work for the white man. So what does a brother do? You know, and so the question was, well, if she volunteers to go out and work, you know, on that white man's job, not to say that she shouldn't if she's wouldn't got a degree, we understand all that. But then at the same time, when you put yourself, it's one thing for you to have to be out there because your husband ain't got it covered, versus mm-hmm. you doing it because you done got you a degree, you know, two or three letters of doctorate, and you doing it anyway. You can't look at your husband all that sideways like that if you're sharing his responsibility and you don't have to. That ain't, I mean, if you don't have to do it, I don't know. But some of the sisters were saying, well, we getting these careers. What about our career then? So what do you think about that?
Well, for some of them, now I understand the thing about, you know, they've gone to school and they've gotten their education, and they want to see, they want to see that they can get the job, okay, because it's hard for black women just like it is for the black man. Let's just keep it real. It is in the corporate sector. But the thing about it is, do they have a degree where they could actually start their own practice, whatever it is, so that they don't have to work for somebody else? Can they do it that way? Because it's fine, you know, it's fine and well for a man to say, honey, I don't want you to work, you know, if he's got things covered. But see, most women still want to have something for themselves to make themselves feel good. It has nothing to do with the man. It's just a woman feeling like, you know what, I got to have something that I can contribute to my marriage when it comes to conversation. Because there are some women, they can't sit at home all day and do nothing. They
right,
just can't.
Talk to the babies all day long.
That's it. They have to know that they are making a valid contribution to the world to change something. And that's where I say, well, then they need to either start their own business or take that degree and start their own firm and hire more people who look like them, if that's what they choose, to do the thing that they've been taught to do. They don't necessarily have to go out there and work for that man, but they can start their own, but they have to be equipped and know how to do it.
Now, Dr. Campbell, I have a question for you. I wanted to raise a question and see if we can get things moving forward, because we've got about 45 minutes left to the show, and I want to lay out some concrete action plans. Something just hit my mind. What if, and we're actually going to get to dealing with married couples who are already in the situation now, but what is the thing to do when we find out that, oh, we pulled their credit reports, we sat down and put all of the bills and cut off notices and whatnot on the table, and it's a straight jacked up mess. How do you approach that? How do you rebound from that blow, and then how do you begin tackling things systematically so that you can get on top of that?
Okay, so when you've pulled all the credit reports and the bills and all this stuff, then you look at what is all the income that's coming into the household. What is everybody contributing? What is coming in as far as the income? His, hers, part-time jobs, whatever. You look at all that. Then you look at whose credit, even though, let's say maybe both people have bad credit or even one, whose credit is better? Okay, even if both of them have bad credit, whose credit is better? And then you look at, okay, so let's focus on one person's in the very beginning and get them straight so that we can have at least one person that has good credit in case of an emergency, and then focus on the other one. That don't mean you stop paying on the other person's credit items. You do pay them and pay the minimum. But you have to focus on who is the one that's got the best credit, even if both of them are bad. And you start paying, and you focus on one bill at a time. You don't say, I'm going to pay off A, B, C, and D, and you only have X amount of dollars. You need to focus on and start with the smallest one first so that you get to see you can accomplish something. People are paying that one that's got the high interest rate, and it's taking them years, and they're not getting anywhere. All they're getting is frustration. That's why they need to start with the smallest one first, which maybe might only take them 3 months, and then they'll be like, oh, my gosh, I can do it. Then take that money and roll it over into that second one. Because 9 times out of 10, if people would do it this way every year, they probably could pay off 3 bills, if not more, 3 credit card bills. Whatever, but you have to have a plan, and you need to really get that credit report to see who you really owe and how much you really owe, because let's face it, most people don't end up in debt overnight. It's a process. It takes a long period of time. So that means you're not going to get out overnight, but you can start cleaning it up overnight and be in a better space within 6 to 9 months than where you were when you started.
Wow, 6 to 9 months can make a difference, huh?
It can, because the way the credit system works is this. You know, people who are out there saying, oh, I can change your credit score and this, and that in a short amount of time. No, what happens with the credit score is this. The only thing that changes it is paying that bill on time and over a period of time. You know, when people have to restore their credit, you can have good credit, but it hadn't been there on the books long enough, because that happened to me and my husband. We had cleaned everything up, but somebody didn't want to qualify me for a car. And I'm like, wait a minute, I don't understand. Because they're like, well, you don't have good credit. Your good credit hasn't been on the books long enough. And I was like, well, you know what? I know that you're not telling me the truth, because I just qualified for a six-figure house. Okay? But people, every credit report says something different. And there's one that paints a bleaker picture than the other ones. And that's the one that they can pull when they want to charge you a higher interest rate.
Okay. Okay? You got to learn how the game is played, but at least
that's right.
Started where
that's right.
Can.
That's right. You got to know how to work the system.
All right. All right. Good stuff. So now, let's make this jump. Let's make this jump over, because I get the impression and I get the feeling that when you get two single people, or even two people who are, you know, at least they're in some type of relationship but they're not married,
mm-hmm.
is it easier for them to do what they have to do than it is for a married couple that's already got the house and already got the car notes and already got the children and the daycare expenses and all that? Is it easier for people who aren't married to take care of their financial mess than it is for people who are already married?
Incidentally, it's not. Because what happens when you get two single people is we've been independent on our own for so long, we're used to not being accountable to nobody. We don't have to say nothing. We don't have to get nobody's approval. So it's actually harder for two single people, because now when you're approaching that subject of we might be getting engaged, now that means that to them you may not have as much freedom with your money as you did before, because you will be accountable to somebody. And every decision you make once you are married when it comes to money affects everybody in the household. It never just affects you. And when you're single, you only are responsible for yourself.
Gosh,
you
so
know,
with a married couple, they'll likely be more willing and ready
yes.
to cooperate. They'll be in a frame
That's
of mind
right.
to cooperate automatically.
That's right, because they know it affects, and it'll be for the greater good. When they're single, they can't actually see that it might be for the greater good, because all they can think is, I'm not going to have that freedom to spend like I want to. I can't just go blow my money, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Because this person's going to be looking at me saying, well, why'd you do that?
Now, one bit of advice that has always stuck with me, and it always echoes in my mind, I talked to a financial planner one time, and he was explaining about debt. Now, he was at a seminar, and he was explaining about debt. People were raising questions and asking questions about debts and, you know, different things pertaining to debt instruments. And he said, look, the solution to debt is real simple. The solution to debt is more income. And
no.
That seemed like such a real simple way to put it to me, because, you know, people get mired and stuck on focusing on the problem, focusing on lack, focusing on what they don't have.
Mm-hmm.
But if they put the correct mechanisms in place, they can address that debt. But you're saying no. You're saying that there's another approach to that, or there's another solution to that.
It is, because, here's how I look at it. The solution to debt is managing the money you have. If you're mismanaging money, that's how you ended up in debt in the first place. Another job is not going to solve that if you're mismanaging money. You're still going to mismanage money. That doesn't change.
You're just going to mismanage more, huh?
That's right. You're going to mismanage more, because guess what? It's going to cost you more, because you have to drive to that second job. You might have to eat when you're at the second job. So are you going to really be making money? Or are you losing money? But the solution is you got to manage the money that you have. And let's think about it, because I tell people this all the time. I'm like, the world is not in debt. The world is not poor. How many, you know, when they came out with the government's card thing, you know, the bailout system with the cars, they couldn't even keep up with the demand. How many people had a car that was paid off and went and traded the car in? That didn't even make any sense to me. But, you know, that's what happened. You know, they have all these professional sporting events. Those stadiums and those basketball games, those things are always full. So people spend their money on what they want, but they don't take care of their needs.
Yeah.
Okay? And we need to flip-flop that thing. We need to be taking care of our needs and say, okay, you know what? That want thing can be on the back burner when I have extra.
Yeah.
Okay?
That's a standing challenge that we have going on the No Romance Without Finance show. A couple of months ago, we issued a challenge. You know, it's convenient to go where you go to shop and purchase what you're used to purchasing. So we laid the challenge out there. It's 6 months, but we might extend it to a full year for people to make sure that they're buying from socially responsible businesses in their own community. You know, then you consciously put the thought of what should I spend my money on into the equation. If we can create those habits and get ourselves used to doing that over the course of a year, then we can begin making smarter and smarter decisions that will benefit us individually and that will actually have a further impact. You know, it's almost like paying it forward.
It is. Well, Vernon, I also like to tell people you need to do a 72-hour hold. And what the 72-hour hold says is this, you know, because you go to the store and you see something you want. It's not a need. Okay, so then you can wait 72 hours before you even make a purchase, because usually what happens with a want, if you don't buy it that day, it's died down after 24 hours, and then you don't even want it anymore.
Hmm.
If after 72 hours you still want it and you can buy it and it will not affect the household budget, you can pay all your bills and you still have money left over, then you can go get it. But if you can't, then you're not supposed to have it.
So no spontaneous spending. Huh?
No spontaneous spending at all.
Does it matter if there's a little bit or a lot to it? Or
no, it doesn't matter. Because if it's a want says it's just something that's going to make me feel good, temporary.
Right now.
It doesn't take, it's not food, it's not clothing. It's usually, well, sometimes it can be clothing. Okay, let's take that back. It can be clothing, it can be shoes. But that's a want. You don't have to have it. If you have to say, oh, it was only one left on the shelf, or, you know, I really just had to have it, but it's not going to make a difference in anything that you do. You know,
what about I paid money because I bought this on sale?
Come on. Right. See? Okay. I will never forget one of my high school teachers. He said, the only things that you need in life are food, clothing, and shelter. You got to make sure those basic needs are taken care of.
And keep the lights and the heat on.
Come on, keep the lights and heat on. People are spending money on that stuff, and they can't pay their light bill, or they can't pay the utilities. They can't pay the car insurance. What's the point? Take care of your basic needs.
May I make a comment, if you all don't mind?
Sure.
You know, after 20-plus years of marriage counseling, you know, I like to remind people that, you know, when you talk about love, because we are talking about romance and finance, when you talk about love, you know, and when you're going into the marriage, you have to get out of the realm of the honeymoon phase, because, and I mean the honeymoon phase of the relationship, because, you know, when you're in love and, you know, love is new and it's exciting, you know, you have a tendency to want to be that giver, as you mentioned, especially on behalf of the men. You know, they want to give. They want to impress. But when you're talking about love, you have to realize that duty that comes with love. So I would just like couples who are going into the marriage to think about down the road how you love one another to the degree that you do not want to create a situation that would cause tension or that will cause stress upon the marriage. And finances, as we know, based on the statistics, is one of the leading reasons for divorce. So, you know, living within your means is very, very vital when we're talking about marriage. A lot of men oftentimes feel obligated to be this breadwinner and to the need to feel that they have to continue to impress their wives, so they go and they get into debt. Or the woman feels that, you know, she has such demand that she can go out and spend to no limit because he loves her so much, so he's gonna take care of all her debt. But there's no love in that. That's just the honeymoon phase of everything that is new. And so you have to, with love, financially prepare for a life of marriage. And I just want to put that out there.
Now let me piggyback off of something that you're saying, because I love how you brought in the love, because where I look at it, love is a choice. It's not about an emotion. It's just a choice. You're going to love that person no matter what.
Okay.
Good, bad, or indifferent, you love them. And so you might not like them because of their behavior when it comes to finances, because you're going to have some of them days. Okay? But, you know, that don't mean that I don't love you, because I do love you, but I don't like how you're handling some decisions that you're making or how you're spending. And I'm like you. They need to realize, you know, that honeymoon phase is going to be there for a minute, but it'll go away. So do you still, you know, you need to know that you love them, and it's the right foundation. The foundation is what's key. Start out with
the right
foundation.
That's right.
So I love the comment. Thank you, because I've been waiting to say that one.
Yes, ma'am.
Good stuff. All right, so we are at the, we got a half an hour left of the show, and I realized that when we took the last break, I didn't actually mention our sponsors. So let me do that right now. Our first sponsor, which I'm proud to talk about, Dr. Staff, you might be just hearing about this now. There's a black-owned, black-operated company that is producing a brand of bathroom tissue. The mission is to break your love affair with all these other brands that you're so familiar with, and we've just been using for years and years and years for no doggone good reason. In many instances, Freedom Paper Company's Freedom Bathroom Tissue gives you more sheets per roll for less money. So if the other leading 1,000 sheet one ply brand costs you $1.39 in the supermarket, you can get the same 1,000 one-ply sheets from Freedom for $1 a roll. How could you go wrong with that? And on top of that, this is a socially responsible business that supports schools, churches, mosques, organizations, and institutions in our community. So some of this money comes back to circulate in our community. So take the time, go to www.freedompapercompany.com. Check out what they have to offer. It's bathroom tissue, paper towels, trash can liners, and a host of other supplies and products. Check them out.
Yay.
Support the Buy Black campaign, and think about where you're spending your money and who you're spending your money with. Now, with that said, we want to get into the game plan phase. We talked a little bit about it, you know, sitting down, having that open, honest conversation, starting the conversation if the other person won't start it, pulling out your reports and making sure that you can see the reality of what you're dealing with, and then starting to tackle things one by one so that what was a problem isn't a problem anymore. Dr. Taffy, how important is savings, and when does savings come into the equation?
Oh, my goodness. Saving is so important. They should start even in the wedding planning. They should have a way where they're able to save money when they don't spend everything that they think they're supposed to on the caterers. You need to start out saving money. Even if you can't do it during the wedding planning, as soon as you come back from the honeymoon, you need to put a plan in place to start saving money. And how they do it is they need to both set up an automatic deduction out of their account into a bank account. And it can start small, because the bottom line is it's the consistency, and money builds over time. But at least start, because we, you know, the problem is that we usually don't save money. We can always find something to spend our money on. Let's be real. But we need to be able to save money and plan ahead, set some goals for what they want to see happen, you know, 3 months, a year down the road. We don't even, you know, people are not even big on having an emergency fund, and they need to.
Right. You know, so it's like, you got to get out of town before sundown. You need to have something in reserve.
You got to have something in reserve. And so they need to start with the savings account first and then set up an emergency fund. You know, I remember when they used to say you need to have, like, three mortgage payments worth, you know, in the savings account, you know, in case something were to happen. And my thing was, if you have to start with $50, start with $50, okay? Make it doable to what your income is and stop following what society says and you're putting yourself in the hole just trying to save money. You're not paying bills just trying to save money. That doesn't make any sense.
Wow.
Be realistic about what's in your pocket. But you can save money. Skip going to dinner for four one time or cut one of them hair appointments, something, okay? But start saving money. And they need to start in the beginning of their marriage. Because I guarantee you, Vernon, if a lot of people who were at divorce court right now had started saving money in the very beginning, they probably wouldn't be at divorce court, especially if it was because of money.
Wow, okay.
Okay.
And since money is such a big and important factor, it just goes to show how, you know, in divorce, I mean, it just goes to show how much concentration and energy and intention needs to be put on those discussions and making plans around money, using money right, and what to do so that we can keep the money flowing in.
That's right. And I like to tell people, too, if you can do this, this will relieve a lot of stress. When you are first going into your marriage, if you can base your household budget on one income, you may have to, and that's fine. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But base your household on one income. That way, whenever the wife gets pregnant, if she decides she wants to stay at home and you guys agree, then she can stay at home. But the household still runs. And take that second income, build that savings account, build that emergency fund, plan the fabulous vacations you want, but let that money work for you. But do base that household on one income.
And let it build. Just even if you do that, you know, there's some men who they may be in position to, or they may have just decided to be the one that carries all of the responsibility, and that's just how they want it set up. And if
the wife
is doing something on the side or doing her own thing, you know that a good game plan would be not just, oh, well, she's making her money, and, you know, that's her nail money or hair money, and blah, 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 if I want to go hang out and do this, do that, do the other. Maybe a good way to utilize the work that's being done in producing income is to put that second income into something that you know is going to grow to take care of you later on down the line.
Exactly.
On both sides of the equation, we got to get into the habit of not just spending money just because it's there, or not just using everything we got for survival right here and now, because that means you'll never be able to afford to get sick. You'll never be able to plan for the future because you're always working to take care of the moment right now. It's got to be a better way.
That's right. And then the benefit to doing it this way, if you can actually do it where it's on one house, on one income, is that you never have to think about what the economy is doing because you've already got money set aside. You will never have to worry about it. And that's the beauty of building it on one income. Because I remember reading a book called The Two-Income Trap. I tell you what, it is. Because society says it takes two incomes to run a household. That's not true. It only takes one if you live within your means.
You know, that I was just having that conversation. Right now, you know, I'm maintaining my household. I keep the lights on, the heat on. I keep food in it where food is supposed to be. I have the basic necessities covered so that I can make sure that anybody who I would invite into this picture, whether it's, you know, a single woman, whether it's a woman and a child or whatever the case may be, I know that all the basic needs are covered, and anything that's done above and beyond that really is above and beyond. We can use that to build and lift us up higher. But if we automatically start, thinking, okay, we got to buy a bigger house, or now we got to buy another car note, and okay, let's go to another expensive school district, you know, that's setting yourself up for a fall.
It sure is, big time. And most people aren't prepared for it.
May I ask a question?
Yeah.
I want to ask Dr. Kathy, due to the economy and the state that it's in now, and, due to the fact that finances are oftentimes the cause of, you know, discord in a marriage, what do you suggest couples do who have faced layoffs or, you know, been displaced from their job, and they may have just that one income, and maybe the household at this time has been established on one income, and maybe now they're having to downgrade, downsize, or whatever. Do you suggest to them that they can still possibly start a new budget, budgeting on one income, and then letting any additional income that may come down the road be the gravy?
Yes.
I know sometimes in some situations I've had couples who had to let cars go back,
mm-hmm.
let credit cards, you know, after they maxed them out, you know, go unpaid, things of that nature. And, of course, those things have to be repaired in order for them to maintain their credit. But I'm just saying that, you know, I want to give them an array of hope that there is a way that you can still start over financially and still be successful in their marriage, but they have to have that forethought that this is a fixable situation and that it does not always have to lead to divorce. And I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Yes, absolutely. They should set a new budget based on what they have coming in the house right now, because they're handling the bills. Yeah, and like you said, they've had to downgrade and they've had to take a car back, you know, this kind of stuff. But the marriage is surviving, and what they need to look at is, you know what, we toughed it out together in the midst of this. So no matter what happens now, we're going to be stronger for it, so that when they do get that second income, it should be gravy, and they should say, okay, you know what, we are not going to repeat what happened the first time. And so now we're going to be better at budgeting. We're going to take the second income and we're going to put it over into, you know, whether it's a CD or retirement fund or whatever. We're going to take a part of that, put it there. We're going to take another part and do something else with it. You know, because what happens sometimes is this. People go without so long, when they get extra, they just go crazy. Now, I'm not saying that that's what needs to happen, but they do need to pamper themselves and say, okay, you know what, we've had a little bit of a hard time. Let's kind of pamper ourselves a little bit, but don't go over budget, even though that's gravy. Even though that's gravy, don't go over budget. Take a little bit of time and say, okay, you know what, we deserve this, because you do. Pamper yourself, but stay on track. What are some of the financial goals? Because while they're downsizing and this kind of stuff, they need to start establishing financial goals now that they've set this new budget. What do we want to have set aside for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months? What other, you know, were there some bills that we still need to pay? How long will it take us to pay that? You know, those types of things. Set some financial goals. And when you start working on financial goals together, the excitement in a marriage is unbelievable when people are on the same page. And there's nothing there's nothing that a husband and wife can't accomplish when they are communicating openly and when they're on the same page. They are unstoppable.
And they have to realize that they are a working team.
A team, not opponent. A team.
Yes. A team. Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Absolutely. But they can very easily come out of that situation.
Are you taking notes, Brother Vernon?
Oh, I'm taking notes. That's why I'm silent. I'm writing. You know, I'm writing this sentence down right here.
Well, and the other part of
the question is, go ahead, Dr. Tapp.
Well, one more thing I want to add to that is this, because, you know, it's difficult when husbands and wives are going through. It's easy for people outside to see, and they want to blame everybody, but the husband and wife need to realize this. The only people who are ever going to know the true story about what's going on in your household is you, and don't be including a lot of outside people, because they blow up a situation worse than what it really is. Now, I'm not saying don't give financial counseling or marriage counseling, but you need to limit it to those experts. You don't need to be getting... Come on. You don't need to be getting counseling from your single friend who ain't married to nobody and ain't been married.
And your mama. And your mama who has had three husbands and nine children.
Thank
and
you.
And can't keep no man. And she's still staying in an apartment. And let me not go on. But
yeah, okay, but you see, but you feel me. That's what, exactly. You need to make sure you qualify who you're going to be listening to.
Definitely. That makes sense. That makes a lot of good sense.
A lot of times when we're disgruntled, we have, you know, when we don't have any expertise involved. We become disgruntled. And outside agitation is what I call it. When you start talking to your girlfriends or when the fellas start talking to the boys and they start discussing their problems. What I tell couples, don't talk to anyone that cannot help you resolve your issues.
All right.
It makes no sense.
Yes.
Don't even do that, because what they're going to do, they're going to frustrate you further. And the first thing, you know, most women will say, oh, girl, I won't even deal with him. He ain't got no job. He got to go.
Okay.
Well, you know what? At the end of the day, your friends are not going to be there to hold you at night.
Okay.
So,
and they might end up with your man if they just throwing it out there to you. Come on.
Right. So you need to not include your friends in your marriage and realize that when you are married, anything that you need to talk about concerning your marriage needs to be talked about within the marriage.
Amen, amen. Okay.
All right, now an interesting question was raised earlier in the discussion, and I want to go back and visit this because this is realistic. You know, you talk about living on one income.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that would either mean that, you know, how they have, what is that that they call? When they call bankruptcy, you call it reorganization. Reorganization.
Yes.
That will require some serious reorganization. If you have a couple that's already, you know, married, working, living that two-income lifestyle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What do you say to get people used to or get them to come to grips with the idea that, okay, some of this stuff has got to go. You know, we got to radically change how we're doing life so that we can move ourselves into the best position.
So what they need to look at first is, okay, because, you know, people are gadget happy now. Let's be real about this thing. We got the cell phones, the pagers, the iPods, the this, the that, this, that. Do you need all that? Because how much are you spending on all those things? Okay?
Mm.
If you have the cell phones, do you have phones in your house? Do you have a business in the house? You got another line for that? How many phones do you really need? Okay? Because when you look at the phones in the house and the cell phones, now sometimes you're penalized heavily for cutting the cell phone contract. So you have to look at that too. But look at what is the most economical? Because people are wasting money when they look at it. Let's look at this too. If you're a family that has kids, how many boxes of cereal do you buy when you're buying groceries? How many do you really eat all the way through? Or are you throwing half of it away because they got sales? Okay? Plan your spending. That means look at your utility bill. Is there a system in place within your local city where they average out your bill? They can look at all your bills for the last year, and then they average it out over a year, and the bill is the same way every month for the next year, no matter what happens with the weather. We did that, and it saved us like $200 a month. I was thrilled. Okay? That's one thing. Then look at, you know, people who have home businesses where when they have cable, HDTV, they've got the Internet line and the phones. Can you put all of them on one bill, and how much will you save? I did that too, and that saved us like another couple hundred dollars because at first we had all these different bills coming in. They were all separate. Can you look at that and say, okay, can we put them all on one, and what is that bill going to be? Then how long have you had your cell phone? If you have a cell phone, how long have you had the plan, and can they give you a reduced rate because you've been a faithful customer? Okay. When you look at your car insurance, same thing. But every bill that you have, you can look at, and usually you can get them reduced. Then you have to look at what are the subscriptions that you have that you might not even use. That one kind of made me sick one time. Because I was, you know, when you're on the Internet and you make all these connections, people are like, oh, you need to get this program and you need to get this and da-da-da.
Yep.
And one time, Vernon, when I cut off all the stuff that I wasn't using, it was like $100 a month.
Wow.
And I'm like, come on. But, you know, you get in there because your friend recommended it, but you're not using it. So
nice.
We're wasteful people. Okay.
Well, here's another one. You sign up for something. It's like a one week or 1 month trial, and then you go back and cancel it. So
come on. And it doubles and triples in what the payment
right.
is. Absolutely,
right.
Absolutely. And so that's
hey,
another.
And you know what? I want to add, because Dr. Tapper, when you brought up how we're gadget happy,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I just want to tell this to couples, because I tell this to couples all the time. You know, when you have a laptop and you have a desktop and you have an iPad and he has a cell phone, you have a cell phone, both of y'all got internet on y'all cell phone, the children have Xbox, Y-box, Z-box, whatever they have, you know, you have to realize the amount of time that you are spending socializing outside of your marriage. And if you would put away your toys and come together, you would find that there are a lot of activities you can do as a couple, as well as activities you can do as a family that does not cost money. You know, people don't play, you know, card games, people don't play board games, everything is electronic, no one gets a chance to interact and communicate, no one has to teach their child how to play a game anymore, because everybody is on the computer, everybody is electronically educated. We need to get away from that and still have the bonding and have some financial sense, because all those electronic gadgets are costing a bunch of money, and there is no bonding and no teamwork in the family unit.
You know, what's interesting about your saying that is our son and daughter came to me last night, and they said, "Mommy, can you make us a paper airplane?" And I was like, "Are you serious?" But they were. They were so serious. And I said, "Okay, fine." They had brought me the paper and everything. And those kids had the best time with the paper airplanes. And you're so right. We got to get away from the gadgets. We got to get away from the gadgets. Because they just, you know, the rest of the night they were set. I was like, you know what? See, I love that. Simplicity is still the best.
Yes. Yes. But we have raised them in an electronic age, and our children are not up to a socialization par that we were when we were children, because we actually interacted with our friends, you know. But everybody is on the computer, and everybody is on the iPad, and everybody's on the Xbox. You know, that's why our children are so overweight, you know.
Okay.
They don't go outside anymore because everybody's in front of an electronic box. I mean, really. And then that's costing money. You know, it's Christmas season. Imagine how much money people are actually going to spend on electronic toys and just toys in general during this holiday season. But it's taken away from the family.
Okay. Yes. And then they're gonna be mad in the new year because they created debt.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
the mission
that your child
has
to put the game
down
because you don't want it no
more. Because as soon as the new year starts,
come on,
have to get to focus on how to recover.
And they should have been putting something in
place. No, you shouldn't have done, right.
Right. And they should have been putting financial principles in place right now, because I keep posting it on Facebook, do not wait until 2013 to develop a financial plan. You need to be starting right now in December and start working it.
Yeah.
You're behind the ball as soon as January comes.
All right, well, there you have it. There you have it. So, Dr. Taffy, where can people find you? What are you up to nowadays, and what do you want people to know that they need to pay attention to?
Okay, so what they need to pay attention to is not letting society and peer pressure drive your money and your spending habits. They can find me on moneyandmarriage365.com. That site talks about money, all kinds of stuff. I have a new
site. One more time. What's the site?
Moneyandmarriage365.com.
Moneyandmarriage365.com. All right.
And then I have a new book series out on Amazon, and it's called Financial Advice for Engaged Couples, Financial Advice for Newlyweds, Married Beyond Newlywed, The Unemployed, and The Network Marketer. So it's five different books, but they're on Kindle. You can just go get them and download them right there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I know you're all high tech now.
You know what? I fought it tooth and nail, but that's the way everybody is. They want them Kindle books.
You want to get it right, you got to go where the people are.
You got to go where the people are. And then for those who are business owners, I have a book called How to Get Business Credit for the Entrepreneur, and that one's also on Kindle.
All right.
Yes.
Good stuff, good stuff. Well, thank you so much for joining us this
evening.
Thank
you so much.
This was so valuable to me personally, but I definitely wanted to make sure that our listening audience could benefit from what you had to offer. And I've been kind of building up and building up and building up to this, so I'm very appreciative, and I hope that the, all the people who are going to check this out in the archives get their full benefit out of this. This is going to be an ongoing conversation, so I hope that you'll come back to us one day.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Glad to.
Good stuff, good stuff. All right, that is it for the No Romance Without Finance show today. I hope you enjoyed it. Sister Gidget, what we have coming up this coming week?
Ah, on Tuesday we have Brother Jihad will be hosting Out on the Front Line, and that series, I think he's concluding the series on Building the Nation. So this is Building the Nation Part 4 with Captain Dennis and Captain Khalil and Captain Wally. On Wednesday, of course, we have DJ Black Caesar and his show, and he's going to be featuring new artists and new music managers this week. And on Thursday, of course, that's my show, Nation Building Presents Murders in a Small Town, where we're going to be talking about some black children who are mysteriously just being murdered and their bodies being found and cases not being solved and things of that nature. And, of course, next Sunday we'll be back with you, Brother Fernan, here on the No Romance Without Finance show. And I want to introduce a new show that we have coming up in January. It's called Young, Gifted, and Black. And so these are artists who are promoting positive music, poetry, and books. So we're trying to dominate the airwaves with positive hip-hop music and kind of eliminate some of the, I don't want to call it trash, but that's what it is that's out there. So just keep tuning in to Nation Builder Network, and we're going to have 6 shows coming up soon. So we're going to have something every day of the week for everybody.
All right.
Wonderful.
And I also want to thank Dr. Taffy for coming on, because you were a very delightful guest, and she's also my new Facebook friend.
Yay. Thank you so much. This was so much fun for me.
See, y'all were always good people. All right, y'all.
Thank you, Brother Burns.
Thank you again for joining us. I want to make sure I call your attention to our other sponsor. We know that people are doing what they do for the holiday season and trying to find just the right gift for your loved ones. If you have a little boy or a little girl who's into superheroes and action figures, check out littleblacksuperheroes.com. That site is being built up, and it's going to be the largest selection and source for black action figures and superheroes. So if you've been on the prowl and on the hunt, we found some good ones for you from the Marvel and from the DC Comics world. So check it out, littleblacksuperheroes.com. Support socially conscious businesses. Buy black. Support Freedom Paper Company. Tune in to the Nation Building Network for all of the wonderful shows that we have planned for you. And that is it. You all have a great evening. Take care of yourselves. Love one another. And peace.
That's all I got.
Thank you.